Assalamu alaikum, and thank you once again for logging on to the Farrakhan Speaks podcast. This podcast is an excerpt from an interview on the Million Man March and its audit, delivered June 6, 1996, in Chicago, Illinois.
And so the Million Man March touched not only our people here, but it really touched the entire world.
I want to address that before I do. Let me ask this. From your perspective, what was the fundamental misreading of the march by the press, mainstream press, black press, Jewish press? What, if there was one, if there were several, what did they misread? What did they, or read into it?
Well, near the end, when they saw it was going to be successful and that they did not have the power to stop it, they began to read it as a coronation of Louis Farrakhan. They were trying to touch on and feed envy within the leadership that your presence there will only lift Farrakhan. I had a telephone conversation with Colin Powell, and I said to the general, I said, "General, I would like for you to come and address your troops." I didn't care what message he gave them, but as a general and a man that rose through the ranks through discipline, his presence would have inspired those men with the discipline that he imposed on his own life. And he told me, even though he was signing books at that time and was on a book tour, that he would see if he could move some things to be there. But I guess when the media heard that he might come, people put so much pressure on the brother till the brother faded out, which was unfortunate. Even Michael Jackson. You know, Michael is a beautiful human being. And I talked with Michael about coming. And Michael, I said to Michael, I said, "Brother, if you stood before a million screaming women, it would not have the impact as standing before a million of your own brothers." And he was under attack, and he's still really under attack. And I said, "If you stood and sang, 'I'm looking at the man in the mirror, and I'm asking him to change his ways,' Michael, your presence would lift these men, and you too would be lifted." Unfortunately, Reuters sent a team to interview me about 2 or 3 weeks before the march. They asked a question about the word bloodsucker. And when I explained it, and I put blacks, Arabs, Chinese, Jews, all of us who take from a community and give nothing back, can be considered that. This Reuters team extracted from it the part about Jews. The balance was not shown at all. And then this was blasted by the media, and it frightened away a Johnny Cochran. It frightened away a Michael Jackson, Colin Powell. And that was the purpose. I'm still on the question of the misreading. They didn't misread it, brother. They knew what this was, and they were purposely trying to distort it, to destroy the beauty of that day. Then they lastly started talking about, well, the message is all right, but the messenger is rotten. Well, now, here are people who received prophets, many of them. You can't tell me you like the message of Moses, but you don't like Moses. You like the message of Jesus, but you don't like Jesus. You like the message of Farrakhan, but you don't like Farrakhan. That's as foolish as saying you love the apple, but you don't like the tree that produced it. God brought this day through Farrakhan. So if the day was beautiful, what about the heart that it came through? Could that heart be ugly? No, that man is as beautiful as the day that God produced through him. You can take it or leave it.
That's what I meant by their misreading. They misread you as a man of God. They don't accept that. They misread the spiritual nature of our people and the need for it. And that's what I meant. I mean, and then they demonize. They demonize you.
Should I respond to that now?
No, not yet. I was trying to let you know we had 20.
Mm-hmm. Now, the demonization of Farrakhan is as natural as water falling from the clouds, producing in the earth what is hidden. Whenever you have to call people to repentance, you have to make them know their sins. America does not want to be reminded of her evils. And the white community does not wish to be reminded of their ill treatment of black people. So if Farrakhan calls them to their own record that I did not write, they wrote it in the blood of our people, and then called them to repentance, instead of their acknowledging their evil and coming in sackcloth and ashes and saying, I'm guilty, God forgive us, black folk forgive us, what can we do to atone for the evil that our people have poured upon you? The only escape for them is to demonize me and to make me the ugly fellow for pointing out the ugly truth of their own wickedness. And so I have to bear that, but I'm made to bear it. So it's no problem for me. I will overcome the demonization and the demon by the grace of God.
Women's role, that was another area of some of our own black women took issue. They were left out, etc. Could you speak to that?
Certainly. First of all, the Day of Atonement, the planning for this march, women were involved from its very inception. When we called men and women from around this nation to come to this home and to sit at that table, women were there in numbers. I think men did outnumber the women, but the women were strongly represented. They were at every phase of the planning, every phase of the execution, and they were the reason for our being there. Atonement. Why did we call for atonement? Atonement to God first for our failure as men to accept our responsibility. God is not going to blame white folk for our failure to accept our responsibility as men. You make babies, you should take care of them. You say you're free, then act like a free man and stop sitting around here begging white folk to do for you as a man what you could get up and do for yourself. When you keep begging your parents to feed you, clothe you, and shelter you, and you're a man 40 years old. Your parents will get sick of you and kick you out of the house because as a man, you should do these things for yourself. So I'm saying to black men, we have to atone to God. Because with all the education we've received, where are our factories that we can say we're employing our own people? Where are our hospitals? Where is our trade and commerce that we could be a thriving community as other ethnic and racial groups are within America? We don't have that. And we need to atone for that. Because God has opened the way for us, but we have not taken that way. And secondly, we need to atone for the horrible abuse that we have heaped on our women. Historically, they've been our teachers, our guides, our nurses. They have been on the front line fighting for us. When Dr. Martin Luther King was leading our people through the streets of Selma and the streets of the South, women were the ones and children that were taking the beating from the nightsticks and the cattle prods and the fire hoses and being bitten by dogs. And as men, that is, if I may say it, it's a damn shame that I, as a man, would send my wife and my children out on the front line for my freedom. What would you think of America if in the Korean conflict or if in the Second World War we sent our women over there while the men were home watching soap operas and changing diapers? You look like a punk. And that's the way we look when our women have to fight for us. So I didn't want to talk to our women because our women are alive mentally. It's the black man that is dead that must be resurrected to life to accept his responsibility.
You mentioned after the Monday and the day of absence, you absented yourself. You went away. If you care to share with us why, and if you care to share with us what did you come up with as you absented yourself?
First, the overwhelming success of the Million Man March deserved quiet from me because I wanted to see and understand what God had done. As I listened to the commentators calling me a nut and a madman, and I guess they just couldn't fathom the greatness of that day, and it was so overwhelming to them that their response was horrible. I looked at Newsweek magazine and I saw a caricature of the tomb of Martin Luther King Jr. And on his tomb, it says, "I have a dream." And next to that tomb, there was Farrakhan standing. And under the caption, it says, "I have a scheme." Well, you know, these people who write and who put images before the world, they are aware of subtleties and their subliminal messages. The dreamer is dead, but the schemer is alive. And why I withdrew is because I knew that no black man in the history since our fathers came to America was ever blessed to call and that many black men answer. And I knew that from that day forward, the enemy was planning my exit out of this world. So I needed to withdraw and to come closer to God to see what the next step would be. I understood that the government of the United States would attempt to alienate the Nation of Islam, which was the catalyst, if you will, and the driving force, if you will, behind the Million Man March. The government and those wicked forces would like to alienate us from the Muslim world. So in my quiet, I said, let me go to the Muslim world and tie the Nation of Islam to the Muslim world, and let me go to Africa and tie the success of the Million Man March to the struggle of Black Africa and call for a World Day of Atonement. And so after nearly 6 months of quiet and reflection, I never gave any interviews. I was very still, no public speeches, because I thought, and I think now, God wanted the media not to focus on what I say, focus on what he did that day, because it never was done before, and people can try, but it won't ever be done again. And they can put all the money behind it that they want to make it happen, but it will never happen again like it happened on October 16th, because that was not man's day. That was God's intervention in the affairs of men. And so people need to reflect on that and why God chose that to say, I'm with you, black man. Get up, stand up, and let's start producing as a people.
Could you share with us the impact of the images on your travels? I mean, how was the march viewed? Was it impressive? What was the impact of it, you know, because it went worldwide.
The worldwide impact of the march was tremendous. Everywhere we went, every head of state, the common people, they said, we saw the Million Man March and the smiles that would come across their faces. They treated Brother Farrakhan and my party as though we were a head of state visiting their country. The media did not wish to show Farrakhan being received in that manner, because it would only, pardon me, enhance the image of Farrakhan that was built from the Million Man March. So they had to say, well, yes, he betrayed the Million Man March by visiting Gaddafi, Sudan, Abacha and Nigeria, Syria, Iran, Iraq, etc. We visited 18 countries, and we talked to heads of state and government in 15 of the 18 countries. And we were received in every country as a head of state. Now, the interesting thing to me is what they did with Mandela and myself. You know, when I went to South Africa, people lined the airport. I was due there the night before, and because of the pilot and the stewardesses had worked over their time, they had to rest for 24 hours, so I missed my appointment with Mr. Mandela. That night, hundreds of people stayed in the airport for hours in the rain waiting for Farrakhan. Farrakhan did not arrive till the next morning. We had an early appointment with Mr. Mandela, and the plane didn't get in till an hour and a half late. Mr. Mandela could have said, well, Farrakhan, well, I'm not going to see you. You missed your appointment time. He was kind enough to keep the appointment with us, invite us to his home. And then when the world press is right on his lawn, and he comes out with this beautiful smile, Brother Louis, and we embrace. The press got those pictures, but you never saw it. When we were standing in a joint conference, some creature fly or something landed on my brow, and I was scratching my brow. They took a picture of that, and that's what went around the world. And then they lied and said that Mandela lectured Farrakhan on racism. But the truth was, they asked Mandela, were there any areas of disagreement? He said, well, we only spoke for 45 minutes, but there were no areas of disagreement. He said, but he just left Gaddafi. And Mandela said, yes, and I'm inviting Muammar Gaddafi on a state visit to South Africa. That was the end of that. But you didn't see that. Black people didn't see that. They didn't see the airports lined with people, flowers and brethren, you know, it's painful to see how our own government and our own press pictured a black man who did something that no black man before him had ever done on the international scene, and then to come back home to be vilified as somebody that betrayed our people, when in reality the opposite was true. We connected the struggle of these black men to the struggle of oppressed people all over the world, and they were overjoyed. And they see in the masses of black people hope for their liberation from the horrible foreign policies of the United States of America.
You mentioned, I don't know if this was in the Savior's Day presentation or the National Black Publishers who gave you the Man of the Year Award, that historically when a black man began dealing with international situations, they were taken off the scene. And your concern about yourself, because now you were connecting internationally, could you address that in terms of that problem, that potential problem for any black leader that would go?
Well, you know, that's historical, and it's historically true. And I'm walking in the footsteps of my predecessors who did this, and the same danger awaits me. W.E.B. Du Bois and the peace movement, when he got back from overseas, they asked him to register as a foreign agent. I thought that was interesting. And of course he did not. They found a way to take his passport and limit his international travel. For what reason? They feared a connection between the oppressed masses in America and the oppressed throughout the world. Well, it's the same today. They deported Marcus Garvey. Martin Luther King, may God rest his soul, was assassinated, and Malcolm the same, because both men, Martin King in tying the war in Vietnam to the war on poverty, and of course Malcolm going to Africa to connect black America to the Organization of African Unity and the struggle of our people worldwide, this Pan-Africanist vision frightens them. And so there's no doubt in my mind that they are planning against me, but God is also planning against them.
We look at some of our commentators and they say it was a love-in, it was a feel-good event. They don't see any demonstrable change in the black community. Even questions of, well, where did the money go? What is happening? Can you share with us from your perspective, what is different in America after October the 16th?
You know, it's very interesting that some of our people would talk like that. And some of them have been in the Democratic Party for nearly 100 years. What's the change? You're still a slave. But that's all right. You can be patient with white folks for change. What did you expect from a one-day love-in? Did you expect that the world would come to an end, that racism would end because a million black men gathered on the mall in Washington? Are you stupid? These same Negroes that speak like this, I saw no demonstrable change. What did they do to produce change? Change is not an accident. There's always an agent that produces change. God used me as an agent to bring a million or more black men to Washington, and that produced a change in the attitude of white folk toward them same Negroes. Now in over 400 cities, local organizing committees are organizing around issues that affect the community locally and statewide. Ask these Negroes that said that to you, have they checked the crime rate in the major cities and how it has gone down since the Million Man March, and how organized effort is going on in every city in America based on what happened in the Million Man March? What do you expect in 6 months? And if you expect that from us, then you ought to be angry as hell for what you have given to white America and you got nothing from it. And you got a hell of a nerve to ask me anything about what happened to the money. You didn't ask your slave master that worked your black behind for 300 years what happened to the money. I'm the first black man that promised you an audit, and the audit is ready. I don't like that kind of talk coming from no man, because you have not asked that same accountability of the cracker that put you in the shape that you in. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That speaks to, once again, as you say, the divisions.
It speaks to the ignorance and the wickedness of our own people. You put that on your brother, but you never put it on your master. That is what I'm addressing. Not that I shouldn't be accountable. I am accountable. But it's the motive behind it that I hate. I want you to understand Farrakhan. You know, I love my people, but I don't like the crap that I see in us, that we would demand from each other what we don't demand from the man that put us in the condition that Farrakhan trying to get us out of. I don't mind being accountable. I am accountable. But it's the motive. Well, there's no change. Well, come on, black man. Let's work and produce the change. Some are working. Why don't you join us in the effort instead of sitting on the sideline with your pen and your mouth to condemn? And you'll be at the Democratic Convention in August? For what? You intend to bring change about there? You didn't ask that of Jesse. When he got 7 million black people to register, to vote, what did we get out of it? You didn't say nothing to the Democratic Party, but you're going to demand that of us over a million man march and a love-in? You couldn't see the value in that? You're just a Negro, and you need a whooping, and you're going to get it. You hear me? Every one of our people that think like that is headed for something, and it's not pleasant, because your own people are going to cut you down when you start speaking so negatively of that which is in your own best interest.
Thank you for listening to the Farrakhan Speaks podcast. This message and all other messages are available in their entirety through The Final Call at store.finalcall.com. And remember to log on to the most widely circulated black newspaper in the country, The Final Call at finalcall.com.